It's been a busy couple of weeks. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. I let it be known that we would be featuring 2021 spring wine releases. The word was passed along, courtesy of a couple of friends, and Wines of BC, and the emails started to come in, and the spring releases were stacked up at the door. To all of you who sent wine, I'll do my very best to get through all of it as best I can and do these specials. So we have two very special people featured on this show, and we'll tell you about it in just a second. Actually, three, as it turns out. However, I want to let you know that next week will be the Cowichan spring release and word about their August-long 2021 wine festival. They're going to celebrate wines of the Cowichan Valley all of August. Our guests will be, next week, winery principals and owners from Zanatta, Blue Grouse, Enrico, Avril Creek, Ventura Schulze, and Unsworth. That's next week on Tasting Room Radio. Now, this week, Tony Haller is the owner, along with his wife Barb, of Poplar Grove, which was just outside my window when we started this show 14 years ago. Well, it was the original Poplar Grove that Ian Sutherland had started. I can see that roof. But then they built out the other window, the French doors of the barn. They built the brand new Poplar Grove Winery, which is spectacular. And when we talk about Munson Mountain, because they grow on Munson Mountain, that's where they live, that's the mountain, for those of you who might not know, that has the word Penticton written in it at the top. Anyway, Tony Haller is going to talk about his Rosé and his Pinot Gris, and then the spring release of The Legacy, which just won Best in Show by Varietal at the London Wine Competition, March the 17th, and got 93 points. So the Rosé, the Pinot Gris, and the Legacy from Tony Haller at Poplar Grove. And then right down the road, that road being Naramata Bench, we discover Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke at Tightrope. Graham is one of the founding directors of Sustainable Wine Growing BC, and we will talk about sustainability on his vineyard and in the Okanagan. And the winemaker, Lindsay, is going to take us through the Rosé, the 2020 Rosé, 2019 Riesling, the 2020 Pinot Gris, and the glorious 2020 Sauvignon Blanc Semillon, SavSem. And then, two reds, the 2018 Merlot and the 2018 Vertigo, which is Merlot, Barbera, and Cab Franc. When's the last time somebody mentioned Barbera in BC? Okay, there you go. That's what's happening on this show. We're going to Poplar Grove and Tightrope on the Naramata Bench on this edition of Tasting Room Radio. Enjoy. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of four wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. I am thrilled to head back to the Naramata Bench, where this show started some 14 years ago in a barn. And just down the road from me, although I couldn't, well, actually, you know what? I could see the roof of Poplar Grove. It was, you couldn't miss it. It was a beautiful tile roof. Tony Haller is the owner of that very winery, and I have him on the line. Where have I found you, Tony?
You found me right in the middle of our vineyard right now.
If you follow wine in BC at all, we know that the grape vintage of 2020 was short in production. What does this feel like now, 2021? Can you tell?
You know, it's hard to tell, Terry, but we've had just an excellent start to the season. You know, it's been sunny, the nights have been cool, but the days have been warm. The vineyards look spectacular. We've had virtually no rain in 2 months, and it's kind of the beginning of a season that you kind of dream of, to be perfectly honest.
I'm going to ask you about how you got through the last couple of years, you and your family and your friends and your winery and your neighbors, for that matter. And I do that because you were in that business. You were in the business of pandemics. Did you know what was coming? Did you get a sense, and how did you prepare?
Well, you know, in terms of knowing it was coming, you know, there has been speculation for over a decade that we were going to have a flu pandemic. And so I guess it's not surprising that it was another virus. In terms of preparing, we, you know, as a family, were fortunate in that we could basically self-isolate as a family on the farm.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
We didn't have to really socialize. And the other thing was that in terms of the winery itself, you know, obviously that was a bit of a disaster. People weren't traveling, the restaurant was closed, all those sorts of things. You know, what it ended up happening, though, was essentially consumers drove our business through the internet, right? People just called up the winery or went online and just ordered their wine that they might normally have come and picked up, but now they just ordered it online. So we were pretty insulated as a business from COVID-19.
But the deal was, if you were a winery that didn't have internet presence, you had a long way to go. If you were already there, you were ready for the influx.
Exactly. So yeah, you're not going to get me to complain about our business. Our business was fabulous, and you know, people of BC supported ourselves and the other wineries to a great extent, and we're truly grateful for the support we got through, you know, a difficult time.
Did you have to close down the restaurant?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, again, we've had to close the restaurant down again, other than we have our patio where people can come and spend time in the patio. So, but the indoor dining's all closed down. Reservation only for tasting. So there's no seated tastings, only stand-up tastings, and, you know, a lot of restrictions on what we do.
He is Tony Holler, the owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench. I saw something about we'll get to the wine, friends, we'll get to the wines in a second. These are important points, because June 1st, gourmet picnics will be coming to Poplar Grove. And the deal is, yeah, you can take it anywhere you want, but there's a lawn out there. There's a patio out there. There's Munson Mountain right around the corner. It's like the Munson Munch. And you basically, and you've got, Penticton is below you. The entire valley is out there. Why wouldn't you just sit down and eat these meals?
Yeah, and these picnic lunches are going to be spectacular. So we're pretty excited about that.
I haven't met Rob Radcliffe, but he, of course, is your executive chef. I have met Michael Ziff, who's your food and beverage manager. They're quite a team. Just for those of you who want to think about food while you're in the Okanagan, Michael Ziff was at St. Lawrence and was at Hawksworth and Nightingale and Shambar. He's a star. He's a star. He's a star. And now he's in the Okanagan. That's what the food programs up and down the valley have to have. You have to have those kind of people telling people that there is a food destination, not just wine. There's a food destination has taken place in the Okanagan.
Yeah, you know, and the food part of the Okanagan is really quickly becoming more and more sophisticated, more and more interesting. And, you know, in the Okanagan, people are using local ingredients because everything grows in the Okanagan. We have one of our farmers who supplies us with asparagus, and it is like the most beautiful asparagus you could ever taste. And so, yeah, we are so fortunate that this valley grows everything.
He is Tony Holler, the owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench. We're going to do some three spring releases with you, Tony, if it's okay. This is a two-parter. The second half is all going to be about the legacy, because the legacy is just making great headlines. But if it's okay with you, I'd like to talk about your 2020 Rosé, which is a blend, which is a beautiful blend. Can you tell me about it?
Yes. Well, with the Rosé, again, it changes a little year to year, but it always is either Merlot dominant or Malbec dominant.
Yep.
And then the other grape gets added. So you know, what we're trying to do is have a beautiful summer wine, nice backbone of acidity, fruit forward, and very, very refreshing. And, you know, it's that kind of refreshing wine where before you actually sip it, your mouth starts watering. And it reminds me of when I was a little kid, right? And your mom made lemonade. And, you know, and you saw her bringing the lemonade out and your mouth started watering because, you know, the acidity, the lemon flavors, everything, just you knew exactly what it was going to taste like. And I look at the rosé the same way. I see that bottle and my mouth starts watering.
And as you know, Tony, the rosé, the first thing that people think about rosé, well, some people, is the color. This has got this beautiful flower pink to it. Strawberries, which you always expect, of course, and cherries and citrus. And in the mouth, melon and cherries and all of the things that you want from a rosé. And this is a rosé that went through a fire and snow and pestilence. And minus 8 degrees in mid-June and a long October hang. This is not just a casual rosé. That's why it's so good. It's very involved.
Yeah, no, I just love it.
He is Tony Holler, the owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench. And the Pinot Gris, the 2020 Pinot Gris. You've always been a Pinot Gris house.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my favorite one-offs that was a club offering was at your house. And you had kindly had laid out white and red wines. And the first one I picked up was the Pinot Gris Viognier blend that you did for the club members. I never touched another taste. I was so in love with this. And I spent the afternoon trying to convince you to make it for the rest of us. I don't think you ever did.
Well, no, it's always been a specialty item for basically wine club. And it is superb, right? And you know the Viognier comes from our Asuyas vineyards.
Yeah.
And obviously the Pinot Gris comes from our Naramata vineyards.
Well, I know that there's a single varietal in there, and that is, of course, Pinot Gris. But what else is in that final blend? You guys do blends well.
Yeah. So in the final blend, Stefan always puts a little bit, maybe 1% Chardonnay, and he puts it's not even 1%, but he puts a little bit of Muscat in there, like a tiny
just,
bit of
just
Muscat.
just for your nose.
And you know, Stefan's become like a master at producing a beautiful, consistent Pinot Gris year in, year out. And the other thing we do, and I think what distinguishes our Pinot Gris from the other good Pinot Gris are, you know, that mouthfeel. You get the mouthfeel is full of flavor. It and it's not light. It's not light. It's not heavy. But it has this beautiful flavor, and that's because we're probably one of the last farmers to pick our Pinot Gris. So we want to get our Pinot Gris super ripe. And we have the advantage on the Naramata bench because of our weather and you know, the coldness of the fall, that the grapes maintain their acidity, you know, even though we're picking them late, right? And yeah. And they're super flavorful with, you know, tropical notes, et cetera. And I know that goes, you know, some people like a lean sort of austere Pinot Gris. That's not our...
This is an involved, engaging Pinot Gris. Pear and peach and melon, you're right, and citrus and lychee. I just love it. And what I love is the fact that you actually sort of recommend that maybe you want to cellar it for a couple of years. What happens to your Pinot Gris in a couple of years in the bottle?
Well, you know what happens? The reason I can opine on this is at Christmas time, I opened a 2015 Pinot Gris, so 5 years old, and honey becomes a dominant background to all the fruit flavors, but a real sort of true honey flavor. The acidity was beautiful. It was a crisp wine still, but the difference is honey, you know, really became on the nose, on the palate, that's the first thing I got.
I'm interrupting your day, Tony, but I have to ask you about the legacy. We're going to take a break here. He is Tony Holler. He is the owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench, along with Barb, and his sons. Like, all the sons are working the fields, And I'm sure they're loving it. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you about the headlines about the Legacy and its win in London. And then we'll tell you the story behind the Legacy and what a great Bordeaux blend this has become. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of four wines, the Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite, recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that the tasting room at Enrico Winery will be open this summer, Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. And music starts on the deck, weather permitting, May the 8th. All the details at EnricoWinery.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. He is Tony Holler, the owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench up on Munson Mountain. I watched, because Meg and I were in Naramata, and just below Munson Mountain, just across this little valley floor, we could watch the growth of this Poplar Grove winery because you couldn't miss it. There was just a Munson Mountain up there, and all of a sudden this beautiful building started to take shape, and you knew that the view from that spot was going to be spectacular. But we also knew that if they planted in and around that slope, we'd all be just blessed. And then when I found out that they were planting Cab Franc, I went, oh, let's go plant some Cab Franc. Come on, let's, at least we can say we had a hand in it. We can get our knuckles dirty. It turned out, and I love that those plantings, and I love your situation. I actually saw something go by that said you have planted further up Munson Mountain, like to the right kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, and looks like what we're going to do. Remember on Munson Mountain, one of the things that we've done is we originally planted Pinot Gris and Cab Franc.
Yeah.
But that southwest facing slope is so ideal for Cab Franc that we're probably going to take all the Pinot Gris out of there and plant the whole vineyard in Cab Franc. The only reason we can do that is we've just recently planted an additional 13 acres of Pinot Gris very close to Munson Mountain on the other side of Munson Mountain, north side.
You know, Tony, that's heresy. That Pinot Gris, which everybody grows and everybody offers up to them, and we drink like in buckets, that is being pulled out for a red wine? What's going on
for
up there?
A red wine. Who would have ever thought?
But a Cab Franc as well. All right. The headline went by that said, your Legacy, your Bordeaux blend, was awarded Best in Show by Varietal and a gold medal, 93 points, at the fourth edition of the London Wine Competition on March the 17th, 2021. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So the 2016, last year, won a gold medal and 96 points at the Decanter Worldwide Wine Awards. The 2017 just won the gold medal and best of the varietal at the London wine competition. And obviously we spend a lot of time making sure that Legacy is a fantastic wine year in, year out. And there's a long history of Legacy winning a lot of international awards. Legacy is interesting in that it's never the same blend. It's always a different blend. And that's normally determined by weather. So in a cool year, Merlot tends to ripen the best of all the big reds. In a warm year, Cab Franc. And in a hot year, Cabernet Sauvignon.
Right.
And we can tell when we're picking the grapes, which grape is going to be the dominant grape in legacy. And so a lot of time and energy gets spent picking the right part of the vineyard, picking at the right time, all those sorts of things. So obviously we're very proud of legacy. And, you know, to be honest, Terry, when I'm a red wine drinker mainly. When we started this winery, my sole belief was the Okanagan, because of our climate, could produce the best reds in the world, on par with Bordeaux and these other regions. And I think you're seeing that there's more and more red wines out of the Okanagan winning big international awards. And it's sort of proof of my original theory that you could grow fabulous red wines here.
I'm going to give these just a run through, simply because there are some wine fans out there have maybe never heard of Legacy or never tasted it. Here's what you need to know about Tony Haller's Legacy. The 2013 won double gold in San Francisco at that huge wine festival competition, 95 points. 2014 won the judgment, the judgment of BC. I had the pleasure of judging, and then the last time you and I had an interview was at the judgment of BC, and you were just glowing because, really, I mean, you came through. You bested the best of the world. And then 2015, London, you won the gold, 91 points. 2016, the gold with 96 points, Decanter World Wine Awards. And the 2017, gold, 93 points, best in show by varietal in London, March the 17th. Congratulations.
Thank you.
By the way, that last blend, I know that the news 2017 doesn't come out until September, but the last blend, the 2016, was a 33 Cab Franc, 25 Malbec, 15 Merlot, 14 Cab, 13 Petit Verdot. I mean, that's a beautiful blend. So then it just kind of moves around. And if you wine fan are stuck on having that same bottle of wine every year, maybe you might want to look elsewhere, because this is going to change from year to year. What you do is you believe in the people actually making this wine. You buy into them. You even do futures if you can, because they know what they're doing is going to change from year to year, but it's always going to be sensational. Did I get that right?
You got that right. And you know, one of the advantages we have is when I bought the winery from Ian and Gita,
yep,
we hired Stepan Arneson. So he's been with us since 2007.
Wow.
And so, you know, the consistency of our winemaking team, I think, is a big advantage we have. Stefan is sticking with the family, and you know, he's got his winemaking team. One of my youngest son actually works on the winemaking team as well. So I think having the same winemaker who really understands the vineyards and what the vineyards can do makes a big difference when it comes to the quality of the wine.
Actually, one of the things I remember Ian being very proud of was the Merlot coming off of those vineyards for Poplar Grove. And for me, it's always the Merlot. While you were talking, I just tasted the 2017. Thank you for sending that. And it's the Merlot that comes out at me, but that's just my heart and my head. I just love everything about this blend. And I love the way you make it. You, 21 months in barriques in French oak, you keep all of the varietals separate from each other, and
yes,
then they get blended together, and then they mature in bottles for 2 years. The blending must be sensational. That your blending session must be unbelievable. How long does it take? Does it take a day or two or three?
It takes a couple of days, because you're talking about tasting, you know, through 300 barrels.
Yeah, I know. I know. Wow. Do you know the price point on this Legacy?
Price point is $60 plus tax.
Okay. And it sellers a long time, right?
Yeah, we're drinking Legacy, wasn't called Legacy at the time, but Legacy that Ian made in 1998. So over 20 years old.
Wow.
And it's beautiful.
Okay, here's the deal. I have two bottles left of the Legacy I brought back from the Okanagan. I have a 2005.
Right. Yeah.
And I have a 2006. Now, that means that I'm have extended the life in bottle of those wines. Are they going to be okay, do you think?
They're going to be fine. I've had the 2005 recently. A couple years ago, I had the 2006, and both still had a lot of life in them. I think Legacy literally easily goes out 20 years.
Wow. That's amazing. That's just amazing. Because the most we ever see, and you know, when John Schreiner does his iconic book, and he talks about how long to hang on to those wines, the longest I ever see is 10 to 12 and 13 years. That's amazing that this wine can do that journey.
Yeah, no, we obviously keep a lot of our old vintages just to see how they react. And obviously there's year-to-year variability on how the wines age, but it's surprising how long you can hold these wines and they still keep their fruit. They have the bright acidity. They, you know, they're super, super smooth because, you know, the tannins are so ripe. Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing.
You've done a great job, you and your team and everybody involved has done a great job in keeping the name Poplar Grove front and center and absolutely one of the high watermarks in Canadian wine and now just world wine. So here's the deal. Is the rosé out now?
The rosé's out now, yeah. Pinot Gris out.
The Pinot Gris out. The Legacy comes out in September.
In September, that's correct.
And congratulations on getting that the restaurant up and running by June 1, because that's what people are looking for. They want some sense of normalcy, and that's it. If you can grab food, sit on the lawn, and enjoy your family and your meal, fantastic. Way to go.
Yeah, no, it doesn't get any better.
Congratulations, Tony Holler.
Thanks, Terry. Nice talking to you.
Thank you,
mate.
All the best. Tony Holler, he is the owner of Poplar Grove on the Naramata Bench, and that's why we're talking to him over these two segments. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite, recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that the tasting room at Enrico Winery will be open this summer, Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. And music starts on the deck, weather permitting, May the 8th. All the details at EnricoWinery.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. They are very happy to report that their tasting room is open for spring, Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the Bistro at Hillside Winery is also open, with a new menu and a new executive chef, Evan Robertson. Bistro hours Wednesday to Sunday, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Dinner service, grab-and-go picnic packs, and takeout will be available through the Bistro. Just a reminder that there's Canada-wide complimentary shipping on all online orders of six or more bottles. All the fine details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. And we are halfway through this edition of the spring releases, basically. It's a spring release specials. And strangely enough, everybody seems to be showing up from Naramata Bench. How unusual that the people who are probably the most forward-thinking, aggressive, and tightly wound winemaking area show up first to say, we'll talk to you. So here we are. We're heading for Tightrope. And Lindsay and Graham O'Rourke. First of all, I want to ask you a couple of things. Are you okay? Have you had your shots? How are you doing?
Yes, we're both. I'm good. We're both okay. Yeah, we had shots about 3 weeks ago. So
very well.
Yeah.
Well done. And how have the last 2 years been? This disaster that befell the world. How have you been able to adapt? And how's it felt around you in your community?
Obviously it's been strange as it has for everyone. But last year, once we got through being shut down for a few months, we were lucky sort of online sales picked up for us, which was helpful. And then we were able to open last summer and have a relatively normal, summer. I mean, as far as COVID goes, we had lots of people coming to visit. There wasn't much else to do up here. You know, all the festivals were closed. So it seemed like golf and wine tasting were the two things you're able to do. So with, you know, all our different COVID protocols in place, we actually had quite a few guests. So it was, it wasn't a bad season actually. And then this spring, unfortunately, with the travel restrictions in place, we're very quiet right now. So yeah, it's been pretty quiet this May, but hopefully with everyone doing what they're supposed to, hopefully those restrictions will be lifted, and I'm hoping again for another sort of, you know, COVID normal summer, I guess.
And and Graham, the vineyards don't care, obviously, but you did have problems with a smoke taint in some areas and a lower production. Did it show itself in your vineyards as well?
We had a slightly less production in 2020. It was a cool spring. It was a cool, wet start. Heat didn't really come on till after Canada Day, and then it lasted hot and dry until near the end of September. But no, for us, the smoke, that the fire that happened down in south of OK Falls seemed to be short-lived and wasn't really a problem.
Okay.
Listen, here anyway.
I know I want to tell folks that, that one of the things that actually set this entire interview in motion was that there was a press release from Tina Baird, or at least Tina sent it my way, saying that you had achieved a sustainability intoxication. You had, in fact, you had been, always wanted to be sustainable, and you'd made another step in that direction. And it helps, of course, Graham, that you're one of the founding directors of Sustainable Wine Growing BC. So in the second half of this interview, we will talk about, we'll focus on your sustainability practices, and you can touch on it along the way. But, I mean, your releases that came just blew me away. There were so many of them. That's why I'm going to get into them right away, because I don't want to shortchange any of these wines. And the first one out of the box, I knew it was going to be the first one in the fridge to chill, and that's the 2020 Rosé. How are you guys in Rosé? Is it one of your best, if not the best seller?
I would say the Pinot Gris and the Rosé are two best sellers for sure. Yeah.
And yours is first of all, we almost talk about color. What color does it come in? And secondly, what are the nose factors like? What does it taste like in the mouth? I can tell you this, that you're going to get your hit of strawberry that you always want from a rosé, but there's grapefruit in there. There's a baking spice. I don't know which one it is because I'm not allowed to do any baking, but I can smell it. And it's clean. Here's the thing. It's clean and dry. It's beautiful, but it's a blend. Tell us about the blend.
Yeah, so this blend is actually the first time that we've used this blend. Our rosé has traditionally been Pinot Noir based with a splash of Barbera. And last year we found we were a bit short on Pinot Noir grapes. So we actually have a young block of Syrah that's just a few years old. And so it's just coming into production, and we used some of the grapes from that to add it to the rosé. And I'm really happy with how that turned out. It sort of added a little more depth and complexity to the rosé. So the Barbera is a unique grape for the valley in general. And then I think we're probably the only one that has used it in a rosé. Mm-hmm. And it's the one that gives it the really nice deep color.
Yeah.
And I think that spiciness that you're talking about as well.
75 Pinot Noir, 20% Syrah, and 5% Barbera. Now, do you deal with them separately, and then when they're all ready to go, blend them together and put and that's what shows up in the bottle?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. That's how we do it.
So the blending must be kind of interesting. How long does that take?
I don't know. Well, we usually do a big blending trial with all of the whites and the rosé and everything together. So we it takes a couple hours to go through everything and come up with the final blend.
And there's no hand-to-hand fighting? No, nobody throws anything?
There's a few disagreements, I suppose, but we usually come to a consensus in the end.
And 1 to 2 days on the skins, right? Which is where you're getting your color?
Yeah, so the Pinot Noir, it depends on the year, but it's often, usually at least overnight, sometimes a couple days, depending on the extraction we get. And that's, the Syrah, however, went straight into press. We didn't do any skin contact with the Syrah. I was a bit nervous of getting too much color, so, and yeah, too much sort of tannin and spiciness, so we just went straight into the press without, so we get those nice bright fruit flavors. And
I can't remember a rosé, by the way, that, I can't remember a rosé that actually said cellar till 2022 if you want. Like you're actually, what is it going to be like in 2 years' time or a year and a half? What's going to change in the bottle?
It's not that it gets a lot of age character. It just holds its own. So it stays nice and fruity and fresh. The mouthfeel will sort of soften up a little bit over time. But yeah, I find with some rosés, they just don't age well because the fruit character kind of drops out and they, you know, they lose their freshness. But I think because we're under a screw cap, our rosé actually can age, you know, for a couple of years and still hold that nice brightness and those primary fruit flavors and stuff. So, you can definitely leave it for more than a year.
Hey, Graham, I think I've lost you. If you could just step forward and talk about the Riesling for a second, will you? The 2019 Riesling, with what that says actually in its notes, sustainably grown. Can you explain?
Well, we've always grown our fruit in a responsible way, like socially responsible for the neighborhood, the neighbors around us, and the environment in mind. I've kind of learned how to do this back in 2005 and 2006 when we were going to school. The New Zealand sustainability program was a big deal for everybody there, and that's where we went to school and learned. And I was working at a vineyard that was under their program, so I just have always sort of had those principles in mind as far as cover crop and your irrigation and your fungicides, just doing everything for a reason, not just following a calendar or the day of the week.
Actually, I did a 10-day tour of New Zealand, just doing stories on sustainability. And I think the figure that was given me then, this is about 8 years ago, 75% to 80% of the wineries in New Zealand were aiming for sustainability, but there was 20% that didn't care. They were just going to do what they do. They would love to be totally 100% sustainable. Would you as well?
100%. I would love for the entire industry to get onto this initiative of sustainable wine growing and being holistically responsible for, you know, every single practice you do, whether you're treating the soil, the vines, the plants, you know, the social side of it, as far as your neighbors, we all should have this at the forefront of our thought, the way we're treating the land.
We're talking tightrope wines on the Naramata Bench with Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke. Lindsay, tell me about this Riesling. It's ginormous in the mouth. It's beautiful in the mouth. And I can't imagine what it would be like to hold on to this for a couple of years, maybe, as you suggest, 2025, and just see what happens with this.
Yeah, great. I'm glad that you're enjoying it. So this is, it's an estate-grown Riesling. We have an acre and a half here, and we have two different clones, 21B and 49. And they're all, they're picked together, but we do two picks. The vineyard's on a slope, and the top half of the vineyard ripens faster than the bottom half. So we'll usually pick the top half first, and then wait sometimes a week to 10 days to pick the bottom portion. And then they will be fermented separately and blended back together later. We also, too, if the weather is good, temperature-wise, we'll actually leave the grapes in the press overnight just to get a little more extra skin contact as well.
Nice.
So if it's cool enough, we'll do that. If it's going to be 15 degrees overnight, we probably won't do that. Sometimes that happens, but usually we're lucky enough to at least get one or two press loads left in the press.
It is a beautiful Riesling. Congratulations. Fantastic. What's the price point on
it? Thank you. It's around $23, I believe.
Yep.
Retail, yeah.
2020 Pinot Gris from Tightrope. Tropical fruit, lots of lime, grapefruit, Granny Smith, one of those green apples. Just it's fabulous. Handpicked and pressed the same day, and good. And you can sell her until 2022. It's $21.50, or at least at the winery. How much Pinot Gris did you make?
We around 600 cases, I believe.
So we can find it.
I say that because
something this good is going to go quickly. It's very good. Everybody's making a Pinot Gris. And this is literally singular. It's a tightrope Pinot Gris. That's what it is.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like I said, it is one of our best sellers. And just coming from the bench here, I think it's got such a really nice minerality that you don't always see in some Pinot Gris. And we have a sort of philosophy here that we don't want it to be too alcoholic either. So we usually tend to pick our grapes earlier than others might. But that all comes down to sort of balance in the vineyard, and that's sort of where Graham comes in, and in that we get a great concentration of flavors without too much sugar accumulation. So we're able to get all those great flavors, but, you know, keep the alcohol down
okay.
as well. So it's not too overripe or anything. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Did I get the price point on that Pinot Gris?
Did you say
21 and a half? Yeah, 21 and a half. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Now, listen, you know how I had this plan for part one and part two?
Yeah.
We've already filled part one. So I'm going to stop right now, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the incredible Sauv Blanc Sem that came out of the box and was immediately thrown in the fridge. And we'll talk about the Merlot, and we'll talk about the Vertigo. We're talking Tightrope Vineyards on the Naramata Bench with Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke. We'll be right back. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. They are very happy to report that their tasting room is open for spring, Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the Bistro at Hillside Winery is also open, with a new menu and a new executive chef, Evan Robertson. Bistro hours Wednesday to Sunday, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Dinner service, grab-and-go picnic packs, and takeout will be available through the Bistro. Just a reminder that there's Canada-wide complimentary shipping on all online orders of 6 or more bottles. All the fine details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Mooncursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tarriga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online right after the May long weekend. Mooncursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. Terry David Mulligan, the fourth and final segment of the show about new releases 2021. Actually, it's really celebrating the fact that there's almost a normalcy to the releases. They come out just about the same time in the spring and the fall, and it's the first normal that's come along in quite some time, and I think we should celebrate it. I have Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke from Tightrope on Naramata Bench, and their new releases. We've already gone through the Rosé, the Riesling, and the Pinot Gris, still to come, the Merlot and the Vertigo. But, and we'll talk about sustainability, I loved the 2020 Sauvignon Blanc Semillon, this white Bordeaux from these people, this Tightrope, the Tightrope kids.
Thank you.
80% Sauv Blanc, 20% Semillon. Here's the thing, here's the trick that it pulls. It is dry, it is crisp, it is clean. But it has texture, and I'm going, wait a minute, you can't have texture and be dry and crisp and clean. But the thing about it is it has peach and mango in there, which kind of gives it that mouthfeel, along with the lime and the lemon. I'm getting carried away here. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Yeah, that wine comes from our Thomas Vineyard, which is our second vineyard, which we just purchased last fall. We've been buying fruit from that vineyard for several years, but it came up for sale, so sort of jumped at the chance to buy that. And so, yeah, I believe the vine, Graham can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the vines are probably about 12 or 14 years old, I think.
Nice.
And they're both grown on that vineyard there. And we have been making this wine since 2016. And I feel like it's taken me a few years to sort of get my process down right with that. But I think it's finally starting to work out really well. We've been making some nice wines from there. So.
One of the tricks that you have to go through, you're going to actually create them separately and then blend them together at the end, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So it's not a given that what the blend will be every year. I did say to someone, like, often that when the Sauvignon Blanc is fermenting, it smells so good and lovely, and you think, oh, I'm just going to make a straight Sauvignon Blanc this year. But then every year we try it blended, and it's a lot better. So we always go with the blended one. So.
I don't know where the cut grass comes from. It's like a fumé, for God's sake. It just comes out of nowhere and surprises me and makes my heart shift. I love that. And you're suggesting cellaring through 2022. How will it change in the bottle, do you think, guys?
So like you were talking about texture, I think the texture will develop for sure. I know with the semi on it, it adds in that little bit more sort of the, you know, fullness and texture in the mouth. And I think it will just, like right now you're saying it's very crisp. And I think that's that crispness will lighten up a little bit over time, or soften up, I guess, is a better descriptor. But yeah.
Nice blending. I love this. This is good. How many cases?
This year we have about 300, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember now. Yeah, just over 300 cases.
So. I just need to know how hard I'm going to chase. And I have $22 at the winery?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. We're talking Tightrope Vineyards on the Naramata Bench with Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke. Let's talk red wines at Tightrope. The 2018 Merlot, 12 months in French oak. Good to cellar until 2029. This is a beautiful bottle of wine. It's a celebration of Merlot in the mouth. Merlot, as you well know, has been shortchanged and brushed aside from time to time. I believe it loves the Okanagan, and I think you winemakers like it as well, don't you?
I have to say I'm one of those people that was a bit dismissive of Merlot as well, to be honest. But over the last few years, I've really enjoyed making this wine. I've grown to appreciate it a lot more. And it does do well in the Okanagan. It does well on our site here. Graham can talk more too about the growing. That's his area. But
I was going to ask Graham Graham, why does it love our conditions? Is it the soil?
Well, it is 100%. The soil plays a huge part in how the vine behaves. And then you can manipulate Merlot with irrigation, as far as canopy size and berry size and things like that. And then because we cool down at night on the Naramata bench, all the acid doesn't respire out of the grapes. The acid respires out of grapes during warm nights, and here, because it cools down, it retains that acidity, and it gives it a nice balance. Where, and in some of the hotter regions of the Okanagan, and where it's a bit sandy and it stays very hot at night, find them a little bit flat. So I think on this site, in the whole of the Naramata Bench, suitable sites here do a really good job of filling out the profile of Merlot.
We're talking Tightrope Vineyards on the Naramata Bench with Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke. First of all, it's a fine bottle of Merlot, very representative of the Okanagan in BC. It's $27, friends. It's $27, and I guarantee you it'll be the best $27 you plunk down, simply because it's unlike anybody's Merlot, which is the great thing about Merlot. Everybody makes it differently, just like they do a Zin, just like they do a Pinot Noir, but this is Naramata Bench Merlot. It's really good.
I feel like it's a very good representation. It has a nice alcohol balance, and it shows the Naramata Bench for sure.
And it's going to cellar well, you guys. You know that, up until 2029. For those of us who have time to wait around for that kind of thing. Some of us have.
Well, we have a bottle of 2009 still here in our cellar that one day we're going to have to get into so we can gauge the cellar ability of the wine.
All right. I'll be right there. The 2018, the 2018 Verdigo. Explain the blend, would you, Lindsay?
Sure. So the Verdigo is a fairly unique, well, I would say totally unique blend for the Okanagan. It's Merlot, Barbera, and Cabernet Franc. So it's the 2018 is 45% Merlot, 30% Barbera, and 25% Cab Franc. We grow the Barbera here on our estate, like the vineyard, like winery vineyard, the estate vineyard. And I think we're only one of about two or three vineyards in the valley that grow Barbera. So we wanted to showcase it in a red wine. I don't know that we ever do Barbera on its own. Not sure if your listeners are familiar with Barbera, but it's a grape. It's a northern Italian grape that has a very deep color, sort of medium tannins and a high acidity. And so it really does retain its acidity here. So on its own, it is a little bit acidic, but with the Merlot and the Cabernet Franc, it balances that all out. And it just makes this lovely medium-bodied red wine with full of like lots of fruit flavors and that bit of spiciness we were talking about before. So it's a lovely wine.
Tell me about the barrel program, Lindsay.
So this one is 50% new oak, pretty much all French oak with maybe, a little bit of American oak thrown in there as well, just for a bit of added complexity. It spends about 10 months in barrel.
Yeah. Wild ferment?
No, not on any of these. I've been experimenting. We do a wild ferment on our Pinot Noir, and I've been experimenting with some of the other grapes. But so far, these ones are not wild fermented. But
so let me go back. The price point on the Merlot, the 2018 Merlot, I have 27, but that's winery price, right?
Yes, that's, yeah.
Okay, right. And the 2018 Verdigo is a 36 winery price.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep it in mind. Great. So the Rosé, the Riesling, the Pinot Gris, the Sauv Blanc Semillon, the incredible Merlot, and the Verdigo, those are the spring releases from Tightrope on the Naramata Bench. And I'm talking to Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke. Now, Graham, because you are one of the founding directors of sustainable wine growing in BC, tell me what drives your... You told me about your New Zealand training and just because they so passionately believe in it there and it makes for great wines.
Well, the thing with sustainability, it's about all-encompassing holistic approach to every single thing you do when you're outside and even when you're planning to be outside. So like when we're pruning the vineyards, I'm thinking about the wine. I'm thinking about what yield I need to achieve so that we can get the style of wine that we're after. When we planted our cover crop, it was about making sure that there was more than just grasses, that there was a diversity of different things. There was some floral resources. You know, when we're suckering and we're shoot thinning and we're pulling leaves and we're dropping crop to achieve, optimal ripeness for the style of wine, to the fertilizer program, the irrigation scheduling, to incorporating some technology like soil moisture probes and soil temperature probes and doing heat units specifically on each site, flying NDVI, which is a vegetative indexing mapping of the vineyard to help with harvest. It's about connecting day one to day 300, like to all the way through till it gets in the bottle.
Exactly. And no shortcuts.
No shortcuts. No, everything is done for a reason at the time, at the optimal time, to achieve the goals that you set forth. And then, there's a social responsibility side of what you're doing. As far as we've been lucky here to not have to use any insecticides. I have cut herbicide out of my program and not to say that you can't be sustainable without it, or sorry, with it, but we purchased an undervine mower that has allowed us to not include herbicide in the program.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I just, listen, for the audience going, well, what do I care? How does this involve me? If you see the words, or if you find out that tightrope, for example, is sustainable, is growing sustainably, what you're doing is you're supporting what they believe in and how they treat their land, what they give back to their land. Yes, they take it out because the grapes are growing in it, but you got to give back to the land. You have to enrich the land. You have to treat it as though you were handing it off to somebody else for the next year. And so what you do when you support a winery that grows sustainably and produces sustainably, basically you are supporting the land that they're working.
Sure, you're supporting the land. You're supporting our practices too, like our waste management, all the grape skins that go through the equipment and come out of the press. At the end of the day, they're sent to a gentleman who turns it into compost, and then I purchase that compost back and I put it in the vineyard as far as my fertilizer nutrient program. So it's, you know, complete circles.
Yep.
And
yep.
Connecting all the dots.
Yep. By the way, have you guys seen that documentary, the 2018 documentary, The Biggest Little Farm?
Yes,
I have.
Yeah.
Did it warm your heart?
Yeah, it's a great story for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I love the. I know it took a lot of money, but the fact that he was a cinematographer and they could actually capture the growing, all of the small mm-hmm. things that people would never get to see, it really did.
Yeah.
It did warm me up and brought me closer to the idea that I have a responsibility to tell sustainable stories. And here we are talking to you guys.
Right. Yeah. That was it's a great show. If you haven't seen it, I would definitely watch it. And it's great how he goes into it, explain a lot about the cyclic nature of things and how, you know, doing one thing will affect something else and that sort of stuff. And that's a lot of the stuff that we take into account with our sustainability as well. So, you know, you can't forget that everything is sort of interconnected. So,
true. And the critters, especially the critters, the good and bad critters that come around. But more important,
yeah.
Actually, I think the most important thing that I learned from that was that hillside and that farm had been burned out. It had been overcropped and overgrown and just left to dry. And how they brought it back when you see it a year later or 2 years later, and it's a beautiful farm. You know, it's a lot of work. But and Graham, you know this. But the end result is, for example, Graham, when you taste your Pinot Gris, are you thinking about your growing year and what went into it?
Absolutely. When I'm drinking the Pinot Gris, I'm thinking about what happened. And I'm also, when I'm in the vineyard working in the Pinot Gris, I'm thinking about the wine and how we want it to taste. Pinot Gris is a good one for us because Lindsay wants that light, crisp, fresh Grigio style of wine. It's going in stainless. So for me, it's a little less work. I can leave a lot of yield. I can only pull leaves on one side. I can try to achieve that, right? So actually Pinot Gris is a good one because it's an easy one. More is better.
Listen, what's coming in the fall?
So we'll be bottling the latest vintage of Chardonnay, which will be the 2020, and then we'll also do the 2020 Pinot Noirs, and then possibly the Vertigo and Syrah, depending how they're tasting and if they're ready to come out of barrel or not.
Is the tasting room open?
It is, yeah. It's been very quiet with the travel restrictions in, but locals are very welcome to come. We actually have a local special right now, $5 tasting, and 10% off six bottles or more. So if you're local to Okanagan, now's a good time to come and visit.
And are you doing any virtual online stuff, Graham, Lindsay?
I am not. Sure. No, not with Tightrope, just with some Climate Action Initiative programs, but nothing with Tightrope, not me.
Okay.
I never want to talk to the farmer, Terry.
Yes, I do. Absolutely. And I thank you for doing this. And I bless the fact that Tightrope came along so that I could appreciate it in my declining years. This is fantastic. What's your website?
Tightropewinery.ca.
Carry on. Have yourself a great summer, and I'll see you in the fall.
Great. Great. Thanks so much, Jerry.
And congratulations on your sustainable practices and flying that flag. Appreciate it very much. We're talking Tightrope Vineyards on the Naramata Bench with Graham and Lindsay O'Rourke. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Tony Holler at Poplar Grove and Team O'Rourke at Tightrope, both on the Naramata Bench. Now, next week's new releases special will also feature everything you need to know about the 2021 Cowichan Wine Festival, which takes place August 1 through 30, the entire month of August. Jim Moody, the owner, winemaker from the oldest vineyard in the Cowichan Valley, Zanata, Bailey Williamson, the winemaker at Blue Grouse, Lauren Inglis from Enrico, Brent Rowland from Avril Creek and Jew, Michelle Schulze from Venturi Schulze, and Dan Wright, the winemaker at Unsworth. That's next week's Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tariga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online right after the May long weekend. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com.